light of the allegations that are out there, you know, there are questions that we still have to investigate and conversations that have to take place.
The Anchorage School District considers its ban on military recruiters. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 27th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Senate campaigns refine their ground game across the state.
We're cutting through a lot of that red tape, a lot of that misinformation that's, you know, spewed on radio, spewed on television.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by BP Alaska, committed to the state of Alaska through investment, production, and jobs for future generations of Alaskans. More at alaska.bp.com. And by Crowley, celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at crowleyalaska.com.
The Department of Law has started releasing state documents concerning the National Guard in response to a lawsuit filed by Alaska Public Media and the Alaska Dispatch News. Their search turned up more than 10,000 records that require legal review, but the first batch is made up of just a few personal emails to and from Governor Sean Parnell's chief of staff. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
On November 7, 2010, the governor's sexual assault response coordinator, Katie Tipas, sat down with a National Guard chaplain about trouble in the force. 2 hours later, she emailed her meeting notes from her personal account to the personal account of Chief of Staff Mike Nizek. Much of the email is redacted because of executive privilege. But between the black boxes, Tipas wrote that the chaplain, Lieutenant Colonel Richard Cook, appeared to be credible. Cook documented concerns with National Guard leadership, specifically mentioning then-Adjutant General Thomas Katkus. He wanted a guarantee that Katkus would not be informed of the complaints against him. Cook told Tipas that he feared reprisal and that victims of sexual assault also were not coming forward because of fear of reprisal and actual reprisal. The Tipas email was part of a set of 5 released by the Department of Law on Monday, 1 month after the Office of the Governor denied a request for state records sent to and from Chief of Staff Mike Nizek's personal account. The other 4 emails have already been shared with the press outside of official channels. The documents are accompanied by a certification that Nizek searched his personal email account for responsive records, that all such documents have been turned over, and that no other emails were sent to or from his personal account to the best of his knowledge and recollection. Nizek's personal emails are only part of the records request submitted by Alaska Public Media and the Alaska Dispatch News. The Department of Law also searched the state email system for specific keywords related to National Guard misconduct and turned up over 10,000 documents. The department provided a 352-page log of those emails, including parties involved and subject line, and a team of attorneys is currently reviewing them to make sure they are germane to the request and do not fall under an exception to the public records law. The records request lawsuit was filed earlier this month, after the Office of the Governor took 4 months to deny a records request from APRN concerning their response to misconduct in the National Guard. In Anchorage, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The Anchorage School District and military recruiters met today to discuss the steps that need to be taken in order for recruiters to be allowed back on school campuses. ASD Superintendent Ed Graff, in a press conference after the meeting, says the conversation revolved around student safety.
We talked about what our training expectations were for staff, some of the mandatory reporting that we do, the annual training about adult-student boundaries, discussed with all of them what their expectations were, asked specifically for them to provide the training that they do to us so we could review it. And again, just wanted to ensure that we were in alignment around what those expectations were.
Graff says today's meeting is the first in what will be a series of conversations. It's unclear when military recruiters will be allowed back in Anchorage schools, but Graff anticipates the timeline will be different for the Alaska National Guard than other branches of the military.
I think that in light of the allegations that are out there, you know, there are questions that we still have to investigate and conversations that have to take place. So I have a separate meeting that I'm going to be holding with them.
ASD invited all branches of the military to attend today's meeting. One declined, citing concerns about media potentially being in attendance. The district declined to say which branch, but Graf has been in contact with them and will follow up at a later date. No media outlets were invited to the meeting. Recruiters were banned from Anchorage schools last week. Between the candidate campaigns and outside groups, some $52 million has been spent to try to influence your vote in the U.S. Senate race. Much of that is spent on advertising for Senator Mark Begich or Republican challenger Dan Sullivan. But in the end, every race is decided by who actually turns out to vote. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports on the political ground assault taking place in Anchorage neighborhoods.
The Democrats are pretty confident about their ground game, and if you're just looking at the number of groups on the ground, the Begich side seems to have the edge.
I can tell you that we've got a bigger operation than we've ever had in the state of Alaska before. On Saturday, we had about 130, 140 people out walking, knocking on doors. We're doing phone banks nightly. We're walking during the week.
That's Alaska AFL-CIO President Vince Beltrami. The unions are big supporters of Begich, and Beltrami says they're bringing in union members from out of state to pitch in.
We actually have a campaign headquarters we had to rent because our offices weren't big enough. So I had to rent a 7,000 square foot facility to house all the release staff and the volunteers we have showing up doing the work.
In addition to the union effort, a group called Alaska Salmon Pack is in the field with about 30 paid foot soldiers a day. They're backed by $1.4 million from League of Conservation Voters. Plus, Working America is here. That's a national AFL-CIO campaign aimed at non-union members. On a recent Sunday, they had several paid canvassers working in Anchorage, including Rob Gruss. He carries an iPad that shows him which doors to target and who lives there.
Hello.
Gruss is from Ohio and has been doing work like this around the country for 4 years. At some doors, no one responds, even though it sounds like someone's home. George Ann Sprinkle answered, but she wasn't happy about it.
You guys are bigoters?
Hey.
So I'm on the list because I know I vote, but I don't vote all the time. So on the list, you guys know me, whatever.
Well, hey.
She says she's had multiple visits from Begich supporters. Gruss knows that's true because he's knocked on her door before. And he's unapologetic about saying he might be back.
Well, it's extremely important. That's how we win.
While voters may see the person on the doorstep as part of the barrage of political communication that's burying them this election season, Gruss has a different take.
Well, what we're doing, I believe, when we come to folks' doors with somebody who actually cares like myself, is we're cutting through a lot of that red tape, a lot of that misinformation that's, you know, spewed on radio, spewed on television, spewed, blatantly on the internet.
Door knockers give out literature and make their pitches, usually targeting voters deemed persuadable. They also collect information on iPads and clipboards. Those who are noncommittal or iffy about whether they're going to vote are marked for future visits. Both sides are cagey about what data they collect and how they use them. Kyle Coley, Republican National Committee spokesman for Alaska, didn't want to reveal the Republican script, what his volunteers say at the door.
We identify who we're talking to. It's data-driven. We know who our supporters are. We know which voters we need to turn out in order to win on Election Day, and that's what we're out here to execute.
The RNC, the Sullivan campaign, and the state Republican Party are running a joint field operation. The RNC has 11 paid staff. Coley says they had hundreds of door knockers in the field this weekend, a large number in Anchorage, and most of them volunteers. The Democrats have about 90 paid staffers, and Coley acknowledges he's outnumbered on that score.
That doesn't translate to excitement. It doesn't translate to votes. Our operation is predicated on Alaskans talking to Alaskans. We know that, especially in Alaska, that's very, very important.
Independent of that group, Americans for Prosperity also has workers in the field for Sullivan. They figure they've hit 15,000 doors in the past 2 months in Anchorage and the Mat-Su. The Begich campaign, combined with the Democratic Party, say they've knocked on 20,000 doors just this past weekend, at least half in South Central. And by the way, there's a way to keep these people away from your doorstep. Vote early. Division of Elections Director Gail Fanumiai says they sell the voter list to the campaigns every few days. It names everyone who's already cast a ballot. Once you've voted, most campaigns will strike you from their list. In Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A new Republican group has launched an advertising campaign against independent Alaska gubernatorial candidate Bill Walker in the final days before next week's election. Alaska Dispatch News reports the group Citizens Against Walker is spending $150,000 on a TV ad on one station, KTVA. Randy Riedrich, the former chair of the Alaskan Republican Party, heads the group, whose treasurer is Washington, D.C.-based attorney Michael Adams, who works with the Republican Governors Association. Riedrich said this morning he was unable to immediately comment. Walker is the main challenger to Republican incumbent Governor Sean Parnell, who is seeking a second full term. Walker campaign spokeswoman Lindsay Hobson says the commercial attacks Walker on health care. Walker has repeatedly stated he wants to expand Medicaid coverage in Alaska. Parnell opposes Medicaid expansion. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, backers of legalized pot in Alaska talk about their model.
The Washington experience may provide a better model for Alaska than Colorado.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Shell Oil has spent the better part of a decade and more than $6 billion trying to explore prospects in the Alaskan Arctic, but they have little to show for it. Now that the clock is ticking down on their oil leases in the Beaufort and Chukchi Sea, Shell is asking regulators for more time. The company is seeking a 5-year suspension from the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement to keep its leases from expiring. The request has been in process since July, but it wasn't public until today when the conservation group Oceana distributed a copy to the media. Mike Levine is a lawyer for Oceana. He says it's not uncommon for oil companies to receive what's called a suspension on their leases, but usually it only happens once a site is in production. Beyond that,
Shell cites conditions that it says were beyond its control to justify this suspension, and that claim is at best disingenuous.
In a 10-page letter to regulators, Shell Vice President Peach Slaby points to court challenges and permitting problems that delayed exploration. He also argues that the short, ice-free season in the Arctic hindered his company, as did the need to work around indigenous whale hunters and reduce emissions at the request of stakeholders. Levine says Oceana and other conservation groups have asked regulators to suspend Shell's leases before.
If a suspension meant that no activities could happen for 5 years, and the government would commit to putting in place a better plan for making better decisions for the U.S. Arctic Ocean, a suspension would be great. That does not appear to be what Shell is asking for.
Shell holds leases on 38 prospects in the Chukchi and Beaufort Sea that will expire starting in 2017. Slaby writes that a 5-year extension would, quote, provide Shell assurance, end quote, to keep investing in them. A spokesman for the Bureau of Safety and Environmental Enforcement told Bloomberg News that the agency is evaluating Shell's request. Shell Oil might be known for selling fuel, but their logo isn't limited to gas stations. They've also appeared on Lego toy sets for the last 50 years under a unique marketing agreement. But that's breaking down under pressure from environmentalists. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal has more.
If you've been around kids in the past year, chances are you've heard about the Lego movie, and you've probably heard its catchy theme song. Everything is awesome. But what about this downbeat version? Everything is awesome when you're living on a dream. That's That's the soundtrack to an anti-drilling video Greenpeace put out this summer. It shows an Arctic landscape made out of Lego blocks. A thick black liquid leaks in, swallowing up polar bears and figurines of indigenous hunters. Finally, a tagline appears: Shell is polluting our kids' imaginations. The video was viewed more than 6 million times, and Lego's CEO resisted for months. But finally, Jorgen Vid Nudstorp announced his company is going to stop renewing its contract with Shell. In a statement this month, he said, quote, "We want to ensure that our attention is not diverted from our commitment to delivering creative and inspiring play experiences," end quote. Hurting Lego was not the point of the campaign, according to Travis Nichols. He's a spokesman for Greenpeace.
Well, first of all, we love Lego. They've been such a great company, really progressive company, and they've had sustainability reports. They've been very transparent. So it was very disappointing for us to learn that they have this partnership with Shell.
But the partnership dates back to the 1960s. So why didn't Greenpeace try to break it up until now? It has to do with timing. Just this summer, Shell submitted exploration plans to get back to the Arctic in 2015. Nichols says it wasn't clear that was in the cards, given how badly Shell's last drilling expedition went.
And at the same time, in the U.S., LEGO started an Arctic polar set. In particular, there's a big disconnect for us.
This also wasn't the first time that Greenpeace attacked Arctic drilling by going after Shell's brand. The environmentalists lifted logos and layouts from Shell 2 years ago. They made a parody website, held fake Shell press conferences, and bought billboard space near Shell headquarters in Houston, showing polar bears on melting ice caps. Now, as the company weighs a return to its leases in the Chukchi Sea, Nichols says Greenpeace is gearing up for another fight.
And we're hoping that this fall we're able to help our supporters tell the Obama administration that this isn't something that people want.
Whether it's with a petition or another marketing campaign, the goal is the same: break down support for oil exploration in the far north, brick by brick. In on Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Alaska isn't the only state considering whether to legalize and regulate recreational marijuana. In the Pacific Northwest, Oregon also has the question on the ballot. Some legalization advocates use Colorado's pot law as an example. But as KPLU's Gabriel Spitzer reports, Alaska and Oregon's ballot measures are more like Washington state's law.
For states thinking of legalizing pot, there are lots of ways to do it. But for starters, there are two basic options on the menu: Colorado and Washington. Colorado is seen as having moved quickly, either nimble or reckless, depending on your point of view. Washington is seen as the slower one, either careful or ponderous. These are simplifications, of course, but which one appeals to our Northwestern neighbors?
Here in Oregon, you know, I think most people realize Washington has been a success.
The Washington experience may provide a better model for Alaska than Colorado.
That's Anthony Johnson, chief petitioner of Oregon's measure, and Tim Hinterberger, chair of Alaska's. Both measures share some features with Washington's law. They each empower the state liquor commission to set most of the rules. They create licenses for growers and retailers, and they both ban consumption in public. But the two states break from Washington in key ways, too. Take the tax structure. Washington taxes marijuana at about 44% of the cost. Alaska, on the other hand, would slap a flat $50 tax on each ounce, says Tim Hinterberger.
So one good thing about having a fixed tax per ounce rather than, say, a percentage of the retail cost is that people wouldn't have to guess how revenues might decline as the price decreases.
Oregon's is even lower, at $35 an ounce. Both say that will help keep prices low enough to compete with black market dealers and avoid Washington buyers' sticker shock. Opponents say the low taxes are a drawback. Josh Marquis is a volunteer spokesman for Oregon's No on Measure 91 campaign, and he points to other ways his state's measure strays from Washington's approach.
In Oregon, you can have 8 ounces, and you can possess a pound of edibles, and 72 ounces of marijuana liquids, and you can possess an ounce of oil, and you can grow 4 plants per household. We're talking about a staggering amount of weed.
And there's nothing in Oregon's measure, or Alaska's, that explicitly bans products that may appeal to children, as Washington does.
Pot tarts, gummy bears, things that are clearly designed to attract children. I mean, that's what Joe Camel's all about.
Colorado has gotten lots of ink for its loosely regulated edibles, but it recently moved to restrict them even more than Washington does. And it's worth noting, Washington's tight regulations on edibles weren't in the initiative either. They came from the Liquor Board's rules. But the perception remains Colorado is the Wild West compared with slow and steady Washington. In Oregon, Anthony Johnson says opponents of his measure hold up Colorado as the cautionary tale.
The opposition doesn't mention Washington that often and tends to hold up Colorado as the boogeyman. And I think that has come about because Washington has taken such a deliberative, thoughtful approach.
This seems to be the case in Alaska, too.
Available stone driving would increase, and we need only to look at Colorado.
What's happening in Colorado is not what we signed up for.
Everyone knows that two people have died in Colorado after consuming edibles.
The target on Colorado may have more to do with how far along it is rather than how permissive. But it seems clear that backers in Alaska and Oregon are quicker to draw parallels to Washington's law than Colorado's. And that makes sense, says Oregon's Anthony Johnson. All three Northwestern states share some political DNA and similar attitudes about pot.
Alaska actually legalized, you know, personal use in the 70s. Oregon was the first state to decriminalize small amounts. We've all been states that have been at the forefront of marijuana law reform.
Polls show close contests in Alaska and Oregon, but if both measures were to pass, the northwestern U.S. would cement its status as the broadest outpost of pot country in America. I'm Gabriel Spitzer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future, delivering oil today, sustaining operations for tomorrow. Nano Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. And by
Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, with health plans designed specifically for Alaska businesses. Learn more at primera.com/newalaska, an independent licensee of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association.
The Alaska Federation of Natives wrapped up their annual convention with the usual process of amending and voting on resolutions. The resolutions process was similar to past conventions, except for the notable difference this year of candidate endorsements. AFN doesn't usually endorse political candidates, and delegates took an hour and a half behind locked doors to decide whether or not to approve a resolution seeking to endorse Mark Begich for U.S. Senate and Bill Walker for governor. After the lengthy session, the doors were unlocked and attendees streamed into the room to hear the decision. Greg Razzo, an AFN board member and chair of the Resolutions Committee, made the announcement.
Consideration of Resolution 14-46, a resolution entitled Resolution Endorsing Mark Begich as Candidate for the Office of the United States Senator for Alaska, as well as Resolution 14-47, a resolution entitled Resolution Endorsing Bill Walker and Byron Mallott for Governor and Lieutenant Governor of the State of Alaska were discussed. I can report that both resolutions passed.
AFN's theme this year was Rise as One. The annual convention concluded on Saturday afternoon. The YK Delta's regional nonprofit, the Association of Village Council Presidents, settled a lawsuit last month with a company that claimed AVCP had infringed copyright rules and misused trade secrets by providing unauthorized access to proprietary software. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
Since 2000, AVCP has contracted with an Oklahoma firm, Eagle Sun Systems, for software used in federally funded tribal welfare programs like Tribal Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. Brian Nowlin, an attorney for Hall Estel, an Oklahoma-based law firm, litigated the case for Eagle Sun Systems.
So the complaint alleged that screenshots had been sent to a new firm in order to develop a competing product. And that's what Eagle Sun eventually learned about and felt that it had to take action on. Because if a competing product were developed, that would be very harmful to Eagle Sun's business and to its ability to stay in business.
According to court documents, in 2010, AVCP hired a competitor to Eagle Sun, a California software company called Front Range Solutions, to write new software. Eagle Sun says AVCP gave Front Range a login to access the program as well as the screenshots for their work in designing a new product. Eagle Sun in 2013 sued AVCP for copyright infringement, breach of contract, and misappropriation of trade secrets. They say AVCP damaged Eagle Sun's business by at least $75,000. The complaint says an AVCP employee told Executive Vice President Mike Hoffman that the new software looked just like EagleSun's and that the new company, quote, should at least change the colors. Attorneys for the two companies met in private mediation August 16th and agreed to settlement terms which were not disclosed. The settlement was filed September 15th. An attorney hired by AVCP did not respond to requests for comment. AVCP's only comment was to say the case has been resolved amicably and the details are confidential. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
A proposed lease expansion could put an end to a popular Fairbanks ski area. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, most of the trails at Mount Aurora Ski Land could fall victim to a mineral exploration project.
Much of ski land is on acreage owned by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, land the authority is considering leasing to a Canadian mining company. Free Gold Ventures already has a lease to explore surrounding Trust Authority property for gold and wants to expand its footprint. Ski land is for sale, and spokesman Jeff Fay is concerned about the impact of the lease expansion.
Could potentially make it such that the sale of ski land would be less desirable because there would be some uncertainty as to the status of the land.
Ski Land Incorporated owns 80 acres where its lodge and chairlift operate, but Fay estimates about 70% of the ski area's trails are on the surrounding acreage that could be leased to Freegold. A Mental Health Trust Authority committee recommended lease expansion Wednesday, and the board will consider it at a meeting next month. If supported, a public comment period will begin. Fay, one of several avid skiers who have long volunteered at Ski Land, says there's a lot of local support for the ski area.
Ski Land was started in 1962 by a group of dedicated skiers who were looking for an alternative to Cleary Summit Ski Area, which was the other commercial ski area at the time. And so it has a 52-year record of providing, you know, exciting outdoor winter recreation for Fairbanks.
A Mental Health Trust Authority official says it's possible Ski Land could continue to be licensed to operate on the acreage even as Freegold explores it. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Gabriel Spitzer in Seattle, Jennifer Canfield in Juneau, Ben Matheson in Bethel, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez and Liz Ruskin reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Monica Goki. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing freight transportation to 13 rural Alaska communities. NAC offers a variety of service options to get the freight where it needs to be safely. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Salmon are all around us. They're in our rivers and our freezers. They fuel our economies and keep Alaskans connected to our traditions, our families, and our friends. The Salmon Project celebrates all the ways salmon are interwoven with our Alaskan lives. Learn more about the project and find out how you can be involved at salmonproject.org or find them on Facebook. Salmon, it runs deep in all Alaskans. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project. The general election is November 4th. Polls are open 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. You'll be voting for U.S. Senator, U.S. Representative, Governor, Lieutenant Governor, State Senator, State Representative, and judges. When you go to vote, bring identification. If your name is not on the list or you don't have an ID, you may vote a question ballot. The question ballot updates your voter registration. If you need language or other assistance while voting, ask the election board or bring somebody to assist you. This message sponsored by the Division of Elections.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.